We just did the story of Bar Kapara, and there's two Talmidim who didn't live out the year. Okay, so now we're up to Amar of Zera. I saw Rabbi Anshulovitz. I like the way he does things. He just calls on you to read. What's that?
Where are we leading from?
We're coming from Amar Rabbi Zera in the middle of Lamed Tes Aleph, almost smack in the middle. Maybe it's a shade below. Amar Rabbi Zera. So I still haven't quite reached that, but Ami, you want to read?
Oh, okay, sure.
And I could, but he said no. Okay, well, go ahead. Yes.
Amar Rabbi Zera Kiyavina Bei Rav Huna. All right, Amar Rabbi Zera Kiyavina Bei Rav Huna. Amar Lan. That's the thing that said that. Hani Gar Gavidi Lifta Parminu Prima.
Parminu Prima Rabba.
Oh, Prima Permina.
Okay, so they were at Rav Huna's house, either Rav Huna's house or Rav Huna's Beis Medrash. Not clear. Havina Bei Rav Huna. Maybe they were, they were at the Chanukah Mesiba or something like that. What?
Right. Doesn't
Beis
just mean like Beis Medrash?
I know. I understand. Okay.
Lunch in the
so anyway. So they were in. They were in Bei Rav Huna, and he said that these gargalide the lifta, which are turnip heads. So if parminu parima rabba.
Parminu, we said it was somehow a certain term for some type of breaking off a piece. I'm not sure exactly.
So Rashi writes it's a lashon of kinivas yarek. What is kinivas yarek?
Chopping
vegetables.
I mean, it would just sound like, I mean, we were discussing this sound, it sounds like the verb of prima, meaning the action that gets you to a prima. Are they related? Prima versus parminu prima, right?
It may be, you know, shvaro l'shvarim gedolim or something. I mean, that's not a good, in other words, it means, yes, that is. Where is Kaniva found in the Torah? Who says Kaniva is found in the Torah?
Eva Kaniva.
You're supposed to say that, you know, you have to be fast and say great minds think alike. So why do you think of that? So you're the one who's mocked them to say that. So anyway, Kaniva Siarek is actually found in the Mishnah. It's more famous for Din Lagabi Yom Kippur, that the one thing that's mutter on Yom Kippur, Samach L'Chashecha, that you're allowed to do is Hachana L'Chol, is Kenivas Yerek. And the reason why you're allowed to do it is because it creates more Agmas Nefesh, and more Inui. So we don't do it for whatever reasons, but the Gemara and Shabbos, I think in Perek Shemona Shratzim said, what?
I said, we've got enough Inui.
Not again, right. they're working outside, so that's why. So probably it's not going to start smoking, but... Anyway, so Rashi says you're chopping up the vegetables. So prima zuta, go ahead.
Okay.
Prima zuta. I'm sorry. Rashi says is not good. Now, what exactly are you doing to these vegetables? So Rashi claims you're eating them raw. He claims you're eating them raw.
Is this because the turnips are normally eaten boiled, so therefore it's going to be the reverse of the way we normally look at it, and that's why they just thought of making a charcoal.
It may be that that's the case, that even those, you know, that according to Rashi, if it's normally eaten cooked, then although that doesn't it's not entirely clear why. Let's hold off on that a second.
That would be like the Shita of Rav Chisda.
Yeah, but everybody agrees that something that's normally eaten cooked, if you cook it, you make Adama on it. That everybody agrees to.
Right.
So maybe that Rashi wants to avoid that question and says you're eating it raw, and raw already. So you may not make it's possible you won't make Adama on it. So originally. But notice the prima rabba, there was no shai l'chaim. That's why I'm reluctant to say it. The prima rabba, you would say bar pri adama. Prima zuta, you would say, he originally thought it was shahako. Then what happened? So Rehuda said that no, that either way you make a bar pri adama. So the reason why you The reason why they chop it up more finely is in order for what?
In order to sweeten it.
To make it sweeter. Okay, so the question then, of course, is the Gemara doesn't really have any explanation. So what was the Havamina? What was the purpose of chopping it up? Well, that is the purpose, Lamaskana. What was the Havamina? In other words, what did they originally think the purpose of chopping was? And why was it that when you chop it up, if the purpose of chopping isn't to make it sweeter, more pleasant to taste, so what's the difference between whole and chopped up?
Histane?
Normalcy.
You know what
I'm saying? It's used in a more complicated cook.
You haven't cooked it. You're eating this raw. Yehuda?
Looks different.
That's rashi basically.
Fine. And if you're eating it cooked still, what's
so
the difference?
So then if you eat it cooked, so the problem was when you chopped up into big pieces, so then it's possible to eat it. It's not possible to eat it raw. So when you cook it, for jadama, when you cut it up into small pieces,
no, but what was the havamina? The maskana is you do it lahamtik tame, so that it's sweet to eat. Whether it's raw, cooked, whatever it is. And the havamina was, why did you chop it up?
No.
No. But why would you chop it up and then cook it? The purpose of chopping up is to eat it raw.
Well, but if you chop it up, maybe it increases the surface area, you have more contact with the
sugar
cane. Well, that's what I'm saying.
I understand, but what was the havamina?
Oh.
Shalom?
Just to follow up what I asked, I think the havamina is that. So basically, if you chop it big, you can't eat it raw at all, so you have to cook it, and therefore it's edible. If you chop it small, then you could eat it raw, and therefore if you ate it raw, it would be chopped. But if you cook it, it would still be edible.
I understood that part.
So then the reason that you actually chop, so the Gemara says, no, the reason you really chop it up is because you want it to make it sweeter, which it does when you cook it. So the Gemara is basically rejecting the idea that even if you chop it, you would eat it small.
But again, he said that when you chop, presumably when he said, the big ones we made hadama on, the small ones we made shahakal on, in both cases, presumably, it was either cooked or it was raw. That was my question now. Either way, it was eaten the same way. So why then did you chop? What was the habit? And why did you chop it up in the first place? It was to make. If you're going to cook it anyway, it was to make. Why you didn't need to do that to make it edible?
Or what if it's when it's large pieces, it's eaten as the ikar, but once it's chopped up in very small pieces. Then it's, put into a larger salad, it's mixed in.
No, but again, that's not what they were doing.
And no, so therefore, once it's smaller, since it's just used as a flavoring or as a smaller component of a larger dish, right, it's not usually eaten in that very small amount, like grated carrots, for example, okay? Most people don't take a handful of grated carrots and eat them, right? You'll put grated carrots into something else, right? A small piece of carrots you'll eat, like pieces of like carrot sticks, whatever it might be. Grated carrots, because you're going to use it into some sort of other dish, it's not eaten in that way. So therefore,
But again, you're still you're not answering my question. In the Gemara, they used to eat it big and eat it small.
They used to eat it that way.
Yes, they used to eat it big and big. He said when we were in Ravuna's house, we said Perminu Perima Rabba. So you would make a hadama prima zuta. You make shach. Presumably, it's the identical scenarios, except for the difference between them is the chopping size. Yeah, but on what basis?
What basis do you say that it's eaten the same way? The reason that it is shach is not eaten in the same way.
You're not none. Who dug ahead?
Why can't you say that the havamina was that you in the beginning you're chopping enough to make it sweeter, but because it just appears so much different than the original form, you make a different bracha.
So then what's the maskana? The
maskana is that you make adama because it brings out its own flavor and it tastes even more so like a turkey or whatever they're...
Okay, now that I think is a reasonable suggestion. Can you think of any... it's a radical suggestion, but a reasonable suggestion. to talk about why in a second. Chaim, what's your...
Can you say that the Havamina would have been that the small pieces would be a Zia B'Alma? Meaning that you're causing a complete... It's like you're destroying the vegetable, and therefore it's losing its value.
Say better. Yehuda was closer. You're both on sort of working on the... I mean, you're both identifying what it seems to be going on here, but it has to be qualified. In other words, it's not... What's that? I don't think so. That has to do with source lechem. That's shame lechem.
I understand if it changes the bracha because it's not lechem, so you're
going to make
mavarim. Right,
but the point is that it's not that it's mafkia from... It's only mafkia bracha because lechem itself requires an amalgamation. It requires a tzura. So, have you seen anything similar to what you're suggesting, Yehuda?
In this, yeah.
In anything we've learned this month? Yeah. Yeah, this almost seems to be analogous to Kimcha Dachite and Iluya Achrina. The Havamina is when you're chopping it to really small, that's almost like Kimcha Dachite. It loses... Again, we thought that to be somewhat novel, and for the riff it was unique because nobody eats Kimcha. But the Havamina, and here clearly they're eating this stuff. But putting that question aside, the Gemara there doesn't say that no one eats it. The Gemara there just says that Kimcha Dachite, it's Ishtani Ligriusa. And unless it has, and because it has an Iluya Acharina, it loses its bracha. So it may have been something analogous is going on here, and that's what you were really saying, which is when you chop it up, that's like sort of creating the flour. And if not for the fact that, in fact, this makes it better, this is a serious improvement. It's mam tiktame. It's not just so that it's people chew it, whatever else, but it's actually, it enhances the flavor. So then that becomes an effect, the Iluya Acharina, and certainly it holds on to the bracha. Yeah, we're dealing with vegetables, so we dealt with roasted vegetables. You know, it's unpleasant topics have to be left to the end of the discussion of Paris. You know, we've been doing this. This ends the discussion of Paris. You know, fruits and vegetables. So basically, we did fruits first because you know everybody likes their fruits. Their veggies they don't like so much. So. So anyway, so I don't know. You have the sugya is dealing with you know vegetables which you process. So we've spoken about shlakas, and now they talk about you know the process and effect of grinding them up. Even if you think about the yirakos dumya de pas, right? So the Gemara says the Shtana said they are. Well, there's another element of Yirakos potentially dumi the pas, grinding it up, right? The way the Yerushalmi said, "Apple shulgam bein." So that may be what it's doing here. It's odd otherwise. It's hard to understand otherwise. What would the Hava mean? Okay. So, yet when they came, so fine. Then Amar Ravashi, go ahead, Jason. Ami, you're reading. Amar Ravashi,
Yevinim Beirav Kahana, Amar Lan, Tavshila Desilka, the Lam of Shiva Kimka, Rabbi Anima.
Tavshila Desilka is what?
Borscht.
Borscht.
Okay, borscht.
Yes. Beet stew. Okay. So they don't put a lot of kemach in a zibori pri adama. The lifta, turnip stew.
The nashuba kemcha, where you do want these flowers to say more, bread them is done.
Vahadar amar,
pdbe, bread pri adama.
Lahai. Wow, isn't this amazing? No, it's not that. I'm not amazed. So what he says basically is that you distinguish, in other words, when flour is used as glue, a glue agent, you know, hold things together, you don't make a mizonos on it. But what's striking about this statement? Hold on. I want to go a step further. Something unusual about this. I don't know if it's rejecting Rav and Shmuel.
Rav
I'm not sure it's rejecting Rabbi Shmuel. There's something so... There's an irony in this statement. And we've had at least on two occasions where he wanted to say, this way is Mizonos, this way is not Mizonos. Then he said, no, you know what, Rav and Shmuel say, Kol Sheish Baruch HaMish Zamin and Baruch HaMarim and Mizonos, right? Here, you get someone who says, and it's late, so he has to know Rav and Shmuel. I mean, in other words, relatively speaking, compared to the Samaraim, it's Rav Ashi. Right? So now he says, we thought one is Hadama, because there's really not so much Kamach in there. The other one is Baruch HaMarim and Mizonos. Hadarama, no, Idi Baruch Pri Adama. It's really... It's like a bookend to the Sugya almost. And I don't know exactly, I can't assume that Rav Ashi is deliberately arguing on, you know, Rav and Shmuel, on that statement. There's a whole tradition. So, that I don't doubt, but it is conceived, right, so you can ask the question, it's clear that, well, I shouldn't say it's clear, Rava had a Hava Amina, right? Rava had a Hava Amina, which he ultimately rejected. Now, was this Hava Amina any time this flower in it, period, or any time this flower in it that plays a role, an important role, a taste role or something like that? So that's a question. You could argue there's a basic machlokas here. I'm disinclined to do so. I don't know why. But you could argue there's a basic machlokas here, that the earlier Amoraim believed that any time there is flower in something, it automatically, Rav and Shmuel's doctrine is invoked, and it's automatically a mizonos. And here... Rav Ashi, in the name of Rav Kahana, I guess, is in effect limiting that. He's saying, even though, in other words, Rav and Shmuel Machadesh, even though the flower is a minority, it's in effect a numerical tafel still, it automatically takes on the status of Ikar. So here Rav Ashi are saying, well, not exactly. It doesn't always take on the status of Ikar. It really depends upon the role the flower plays. And then the Rishonim are going to attempt to define, if you remember Tosis back on Daf Lamed, Vava Medbeis, has a brief discussion about what exactly is it that makes the flower a tafel, and when is an ikar, when is it a tafel, in a situation where it actually forms a minority of the substance. And then maybe, you know, it's hard to give an exact definition for that. And we, you know, the Rambam says one thing, Bala tells us to say another. So the question is fundamentally, is Rav Ashi really arguing against those who came before and felt that they, in fact, went to one extreme with Rav and Shmuel? Or conceivably not. I mean, if you take the example of Chavitza, right, the opening piece of the Sugya, right? So there, it's not that the flower is mamash or tafel. The flower plays a role, and flower, when it's used as a glue, is one thing. Chavitza, flower is not being used as a glue. It's an important ingredient. It might be a minority ingredient, but it's an important ingredient. I don't know for sure, but it may be in Riyata the Chachlai also. It's a meaningful ingredient, not just a question. It's not Ledevek B'Alma. So I don't really know that for sure that Rav Ashi is arguing. You could say he's not arguing at all. You could say he's interpreting. But it's certainly, from a literary perspective, very striking of having, and every so often this blurb would come back about Rav and Shmuel, Baruch HaMarim Mizonos, and therefore, of course, you say Baruch HaMarim Mizonos. And then you get to the end of the Sugya, and all of a sudden you just say, well, no, we're going to say that Idi B'Idi is a Baruch Pri Adama. You don't even make a Baruch HaMarim Mizonos. Interesting. Okay. So anyway, again, No, probably not. I assume not. I don't know if it would matter. I don't think it would matter. I don't think it would really matter. I think it would be. It would be almost impossible to have a majority ingredient which was just there for glue purposes. No, but
Twizzlers.
Twizzlers have a lot of flour.
That's a majority.
Yeah.
Spaghetti and sugar. That's what they are.
Really?
That's a lot of flour.
So that's a Dever Pasha. That's Mizonos. What's the Shaila? No, it's not. It becomes sugared flavored spaghetti.
Is it, or is it just the sugar is being?
It's really spaghetti.
Sure.
Even
it's called
the
first.
What?
Why does it have a hole in the middle?
It's
hole in the middle. I haven't had like
a
short time.
Hole in the middle of Twizzler.
Oh, there's, sorry. I'm
down the middle. No, it's semolina. Yes. It's made out of the same.
It is semolina wheat. Yeah. Okay, that's pasta wheat. Yeah. So anyway, so bottom line is that that's a Dever Pasha. That's Mizonos. That's sugared flavored pasta. If you whatever you're describing.
Yeah. First ingredient corn syrup. Second ingredient semolina.
How do they rank things in terms of?
I was
claiming volume.
I was claiming that the sugar is more, but. You know, I'm not sure exactly how they rank
them. But anyway, so in this case, clearly, when you make meatballs and you put a little bit of matzo meal in it to help it sort of stay together, so that's called a tafel. That's the dabuke. Yes.
What's the difference here between sticking things together with flour, like to use the flour literally like a glue,
yeah,
as opposed to increase the volume of something, which is to give it volume or heft, or to make it filling while it's not really supposed to taste like that. It's not supposed to be the main ingredient.
That's an important question that I don't know if we're going to get to explore. I think, by the way, probably on Sunday we will have share, because then we're going to need time. I don't know if we're going to get to explore that issue. We will. If we don't explore it now, we'll explore it at the beginning of next month, the question of Ikar and Tafel. Right. I'll probably wait anyway until then, until we do the mission of Ikar and Tafel. What?
Gluing versus thickening, maybe.
I'm not even sure. Thickening is still something different. The thickening is to give a texture, mm-hmm, but you're not interested in the taste of the thing itself, per se. In other words, if you have a liquidy soup, so you might, you know, let's say
sauces.
You might, what?
Sauces.
Or a sauce. Okay.
Sauces.
Gourmet sauce.
With sauces, you'll often use flour as a thickener.
As a thickener. Okay, so the point is, I don't think that would not be mezonos. In other words, I think that's the devik also. The question is going to be defining, in other words, to give it caloric heft, to make it more filling, that already may be considered tam. Right? And as Tosus uses the expression, lamed vav lamed beis, you know, he says that something that's done kidesha yisod halev, then you need to make barman mezonos.
Talk about a selek, the beet, something. You know, if we have plenty of different vegetable dishes that we make that which might be a nafkamina, right? Are we making soup, stew, or kugel? Flour could be used in all of them.
Correct, and I suspect that in most cases the flour in that case is a tafel. You don't make a mezonos on it. You know, certainly, not all potato kugels have flour. Some don't have it all. But if you have flour...
Like a carrot kugel would, maybe.
But carrot kugel's cake.
How do you say
it's cake with carrot flavoring, you know, with carrots in it.
Depends which kind you make.
No, a carrot kugel is mezonos. Potato kugel, when you put flour in it, is hadama.
So what about beet kugel?
I have no idea what beet kugel would be like, but I suggest that maybe, you know, before the end of winter vacation, you make some beet kugel at home and bring it in so the shear can taste it, and
okay,
we can render a ruling on it. Okay. Anyway, fine. So this is a very important qualifying statement, and when we deal with Ikar and Tafel, we'll try to sort of narrow this down. Okay, go ahead. Okay. One second. I'll slow down. Okay. So firstly, there is a little there's a little pasuk in there. If you didn't catch it. No, v'tov lo'inayim l'rosas hashamash. Okay.
Putting on umas soak.
That's cute. Umas soak har v'tov lo'inayim. Okay. So anyway, it's yafel l'lev. It's good for. Must be reduce your cholesterol. Remember also that they didn't know what lathe did. And they probably the only time they understood anything to do the heart is if they had angina, so they felt pain in the chest. But other than that, they assume that a person's emotions were in the heart, and the thought processes were in the heart, and some of them were in the kidneys. Obviously, they thought they were associated with the heart, because when you get angry, what is it that you feel? Most people don't feel their head pounding, they feel their chest pounding. Gabe, we're going to have to introduce a rule. This was introduced by a certain professor of mine years after I was a student. It had nothing to do with me. It was called the Plony rule, okay? And the Plony rule was that Plony got X number
words.
Of comments in Shear, okay?
Didn't he buy some from other people?
Ben, you're next. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara says that this Tavshil beat Tavshil is good for the heart. I don't know what kosher kalim b'nei me'ayim is, but
that makes the most sense.
But if something is good for the eyes, then kosher kalim.
I don't know. You have to study, you know, Roman medicine and figure out if, you know, a popular medicine at the time to see if there was a certain association made. So anyway, and it's good for the intestines as well.
Yeah, it looks like they just need
No, I'm saying, in other words, how did they think nutritionally?
This sounds like, you know,
the slogan.
Right. Yeah, by the beet council of Bavel, right?
It has sort of meter to it.
Pizza corporate.
It does.
No, but it's true nutritionally that it is. You have to
look at the tradition, you have to look at the totally and the culture can be paid by it.
A ditty. A ditty. Is it going to be your campaign, your campaign slogan? Give it to Hillary. I don't know. I'm not actually sure about that. I think you'll find a lot of these, you know, you have these medicinal statements. And I'm not sure this is out of character. If you look at the end of the parak on the Amdal and Amid Beis,
what is garlic good for?
Right, you'll get Amar Mar Tchol Yafa L'Shinayim V'Kasher L'Vnei Mayayim. Ma'ita Kante, what do you do? Creation Kasher L'Shinayim Yafa L'Vnei Mayayim. Ma'ita Kante, and you have lots of these probably scattered throughout Shas. I'm not sure that it really should be taken as intended as a rhyme. It's possible, but I. No, I'll grant you that, but it may. But you know, if you happen to have, remember that you happen to have certain body parts, you're liable to have body parts rhyming with each other because anything that comes in two. Now, I don't know why Bnei Me'ayim is referred to as that. But most any of the body parts that come in two, by definition, are going to end on ayim, the dual form. So therefore, the fact that you get rhyme, the fact that osnayim and einayim would come together in a sentence doesn't mean it was a rhyme. It just means that they were talking about the eyes and the ears, different body parts, and happens to be the end on the dual end.
That's right. Jeremy's right. It has a certain meter to it.
I think you may be imposing your sensibilities on it. I'm not telling you it's wrong. Oh, okay. It's possible. I'm just not sure. Ruchista, you mean? Okay. The question is, but Ruchista could have been quoting a popular expression as well.
Did they think that you had two intestines?
Why did they quote Ruchista? Because the Gemara quotes, when I'm a rhyme, say things, the Gemara quotes them.
I'm not even sure if we do.
That's why.
We have large
no, I assume it, no, but the fact is that it doesn't have to be his original statement. In other words, firstly, that may be our little obsession, you know, avoiding plagiarism, number one. Number two, if you repeat things, you transmit things that you've heard, you know, you might say, you know, if I quoted a line earlier, you know, about the nature during lunch about how Jews, you know, vote and how they earn, so that line, I said, I don't know whose line it was, but, you know, I said there's a line that Jews do X. So you might quote me saying, you know, my Rebbe once mentioned this line that it doesn't. So Rav Chisda could be quoting a statement which is not necessarily originally his. They'll attribute it to Rav Chisda because they're the person they know who cited the statement.
He could just as well have created a pecan type thing.
He could have. It could be his. It could be his. I'm not sure that again that this is meant as a mini poem. That's all. It might have just been a statement, but who knows? Okay. So now Abaye has to qualify this.
This is about the Tradim. So at what point in history did we say that?
I didn't understand your question.
Like, do we say spinach? When do we say trodden or spinach?
Trodden or spinach in modern Hebrew?
Trodden
doesn't
exist. Look at me like, as if I know. Okay. Okay, that's why you're doing Hebrew tutoring and not me. Okay. But I think, and I don't know when it changed, but I don't think it's in time of the Gemara. What?
It definitely only means
beets. I don't know what the relationship between beets and spinach are. Who knows? You would be surprised that some things are related. What?
Two things that don't like eating.
Okay. So anyway, so what does Abaye say? Amar Abaye, v'hu. Okay, Abaye Tape. Yes, this is an important word. If you look in the Aruch.
It's like when a teapot which makes
the
train sound.
One second. Yes. It's onomatopoeic.
Yeah. It's something boiling.
Yes, it's onomatopoeic. So the Beit Hafei is the top of the Kira. If you look in the Targum Yonasan, what Prince Targum Yonasan, and in Eofiti, on the Pasuk of Tanur Vechirayim Yutatz Tameim Heim, so they have Tanur, they have Tanura, and Vitafyon. So the Aruch refers to, it's interesting, I haven't had a chance to research this, the Aruch refers to a Taf Reish Yud, it's abbreviated, which might be just Targum Yerushalmi, which he has, which the Gaonim don't know, they've heard of a Targum Yerushalmi, but they've never seen it. in which he quotes this pasuk, Tanu v'chirayim. So it's interesting about what Tara, he actually had another, he had one of the Eretz Yisrael Targumim. Okay. So anyway, and you won't see, for example, to the best of my knowledge, I'm not, I don't know if it means he doesn't have it, I don't think Rashi ever quotes any Targum except for Unklus. The Ramban, one place, maybe quotes something like that, you know, a non-Unklus Targum of Targum Eretz Yisrael, but so anyway, here the Aruch quotes a Targum Yerushalmi, and he points to, and we have it both in Yonas and Neofiti.
I mean,
yes.
If the Baal Aruch lived in Italy, I mean, and that's where the Neofiti was found, so clearly they did have Palestinian Targumim floating around there.
That hurts. That hurt. And I will not tell the person who taught you medieval Jewish history that you said that. It's not because the manuscript being found there means nothing. The manuscript's location, the Munich manuscript of the Gemara is not necessarily a German manuscript.
No,
just as the Leningrad Codex wasn't written in Leningrad. Okay?
It wasn't.
You know, right? You know, it would have been written in Cyrillic if it had been written in Leningrad. The point is that the reason why you expect the Aruch in Rome to perhaps have Targum Eretz Yisrael is because Italy is very much in the sphere of influence of Eretz Yisrael, which is why the early Kisvei Yad of the Mishnah that we had that reflect the Eretz Yisrael tradition in the Mishnah, such as Kaufman and Parma 138, are assumed to be are Italian manuscripts. Okay. So anyway, now, in order for it to be good, Abaye says you have to cook it right. And this, by the way, whether or not it's true in this particular case, it is true generally that, you know, a food in one form, you know, can be toxic, in another form it can be incredibly helpful. Right? The process of cooking and other kinds of processes can have the effect of changing noxious chemicals into very healthy ones. Take for one, or you know, certainly not take the tasty one.
We have the tormus.
Right, the lupine, you know, which is you know, toxic, you know, eaten raw, and when cooked it can be perfectly fine and so on. What?
It's toxic this way. That's your worst life when we do this to it.
Right. What's that?
Six times didn't work. We'll try it again.
It's like who's thought of it? Something that's toxic in certain parts, like lobster.
Let me ask you a question. Wild almonds are poisonous. They're
that's different. That was a genetic mutation.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know that. I think that with you had a certain there was a certain degree of variance, and it was bred. But how did anybody find it in the first place? The answer is you had some almonds which were a little sweeter than others, and so on. At some point, somebody may have nibbled on them. In that case, they may have crossbred. In this case, somebody may have thought to cook it. You know, well, I don't know. There are lots of interesting anthropological questions. How do people find that? You know, animals eat meat raw. Human beings generally don't do too well with that, right? And you can, you know, if you know, you don't. If it's not processed in who knows whatever factory in Iowa where you
have. Babylonian from,
yes,
from
Egypt.
Yes,
if you're a Babylonian from Alexandria, right? So I don't know. How did people figure out to roast their meat? How did the first man, you know, figure out? It probably should be the subject of a Mel Brooks, you know, movie or something like that. How did the first man figure out to roast the meat? I don't know. Maybe he found, you know, maybe lightning struck a piece of meat and holy cow. And I don't know. So I can't answer that question. But anyway, they did. Okay. So anyway, so now the Gemara says, Amar Papa. Enough of medicine, let's go back to some halacha. Okay. Now, the last statement is a little bit of a strange line.
This is this stuff.
He says that beet water is like beets, and turnip water is like turnips. And the water of all cooked vegetables are like those cooked vegetables.
Why did you say that at the end?
Well, Boyer Papa, the question is a strange question.
That's the style of teaching.
Yes. Right. You're specific and then you give the klal. But if that's the case, Boyer Papa, Maya de Shift am I. Now, the truth is, if he has this question, then Maya de Kula Shalki can't be true. Unless he comes to the right answer. In other words, if he wants to know what is the story with Sheves, what is Sheves?
Dill.
So if you want, if he doesn't know what the story of dill water is, what?
Or Rashi thinks it's anise.
It's.
It's what flavor?
Well, it's the flavor.
Yeah.
You make a rock from. Yeah. Clearly, it's a very fragrant herb that they're talking about.
One second. Ketzach is cumin. Ketzach is cumin.
No, in Tanakh it's cumin.
I don't know. Anyway, so whatever this is, I'll call it dill. It probably is dill because I think that's what they have in the Aruch, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So there's probably good basis for that. I think expect the Aruch has it. So if that's the case, so remember what Rashi is faced with. Rashi is faced with, he has the Aruch, but he's got to identify, you know, and connect, you know, what the Aruch describes with some vegetable of his. So the fact that he comes up with something different may not, in other words, that's to be expected.
We know that he has the Aruch, does he mention it by name?
I believe the Rashi quotes the Aruch, if I'm not mistaken.
Do you have any other Svarim that he had?
Bayim, and he has the Yerushalmi. He has the Yerushalmi. The Aruch, the Rashi quotes you. He quotes in a few places. I can't tell you what he did and didn't have. It's, I can't prove that. I don't know. But he definitely had some Yerushalmi, and he has the Aruch. I don't know of anything else other than his Rabbeim stuff. Yehuda. Yehuda.
Can you apply this to a vegetable that's cooked? Have like the in water or whatever, and you have what exactly is this describing?
Well, apparently, one second. So let's read the what's the Rapapa's question? So Maya the Shifta Mai. Okay, what's the Gemara's question? What's Rapapa's question?
What about the water of this dill?
So Limtuke.
Limtuke, Tom, up it, you put the dill in the water to make the. To make the water sweeter.
Oh.
Oh, lavure zoma to wash away the grime.
Okay, so lavure zoma seems to be something that's put in there that I guess attracts the the impurities or something like that.
Like washing spinach or lettuce.
What's that?
Like washing lettuce or spinach.
No, I think it's I assume it's lavure zoma of the water. Not lazuma the shevis, because we're talking about what is the purpose of the shevis. Lematuka, as if you want to be mavir zuma of the shevis, then you just rinse it, presumably. But the question is the purpose of the shevis putting in the water to sweeten the water, or simply to, again, I don't know how it works exactly, but it sort of attracts the impurities in the water or something like that. Hey, Jason?
What bracha would we make then on the food? Once everything's been extracted from it.
Well, probably if it was lavur zoma, nobody would eat it.
When you put dill in your soups.
No, if lavur zoma would be, you probably would then skim it out. But the point is, you cook. You might have skimmed it out either way. You might skim it out. It might be this is something that was removed either way. You know, and it's clear you're eating maya the shifta, not shifta.
Oh, yeah.
Right. If you have vegetable soup. We can talk about what the status of the broth is, but if the vegetable's in there, you're making hadama, period. So you're not eating the shevis. The question is, why did you put the shevis in the first place? Because you wanted vitamin water, or because you needed to remove these impurities?
Well,
you skim the shevis off anyway. You're left with just the maya de shifta, the maya de shevis.
Right.
So the question is, why did you put the shevis in the first place? You're not eating the shevis. Did you put the shevis in to flavor the water, or to collect the impurities? I'm sorry?
I'm saying in the case that you're not doing it.
That's not the case of the Gemara, though. What would the din there be? I don't know. It's a fairly small amount, so.
But how about in the case where we're making a chicken soup and we put in all these vegetables so that we can get the flavors from them, and we've now extracted all the flavors from them, but we leave those in.
Mm-hmm.
What would we make on those vegetables?
Well,
because
I would say
those are not the top one. The flavor from them is what we wanted, not the
correct.
Actual
so
food.
What bracha would you tell me? If you made chicken soup with vegetables in it, what bracha would you make on the vegetables?
They don't have any flavor in them anymore.
Well, they do. Take a carrot and soup. It may have lost some of its sweetness, but in fact, we discovered with the hot dogs in the chillin' that they're much less salty when you put them in the chillin'. I think all the salt leaches out, unless your chillin' is so salty that it flavors the hot dogs. Kind of bland hot dogs go. So what bracha? Guys, tell them, what bracha would you make? What bracha would you make on the vegetables? You make a shakal and that's it. If you separate the vegetables out and ate them separately, then...
If you had a tarovet of just vegetables...
No, and chicken soup. Chicken soup which had the vegetables in it.
So why would you say...
it's tough out to the soup, but according to this Gemara, the soup might be a dumbo.
Nah, but what's the primary flavoring of the chicken soup? It's chicken soup. We don't. If you want vegetable broth, you make vegetable broth. If you want chicken soup, you use vegetables to add flavor to it. But it's chicken soup. What? Does it matter what we call it? The answer is probably yes, because typically what we call it reflects the way we look at it, and that has an impact upon brachos.
Is that, have we been avoiding saying that? This whole
no.
For us eating hamburgers.
Why?
She think we've been avoiding saying that the whole time, that perception of big taste for breakfast.
Who's we?
I
don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think I don't think I pushed in that direction. I haven't tried to. I would argue that I would invoke that argument in going back, and I don't want a discussion now about this, but to go, you know, what bracha do you make on an ice cream sandwich? So if you ask me what is the ikar and what is the tafel, I forget the technical issue. It's clearly the ice cream is the ikar. It's called an ice cream sandwich.
If I pursue it wrong, you pursue it the other way. So we make different brachas.
That could be sometimes, yes. But nobody would refer to it as ice creamed crackers. I think that as a matter of principle, if not for some overriding categories, arguably bologna sandwich, the curse of bologna. I think that's clear. That unless for some special status, yeah. I mean, I raised that as a serious question.
So why would he consensus? When it came to the wraps, and we had to take a vote, and we went around.
Because there is butler diet the way it's
so
kaladam. That exists within the categories of brachos, but lashon b'nei adam typically represents a consensus. It may not represent the only approach on it, but it certainly represents a prevalent one. Okay. It does give over taste. The question is, why did you do it? Did you do it so that it would flavor the water, or did you do it because you need to remove some impurities from the water? No, but you have to, when you look at the chicken soup, you have to decide. In other words, if you make a hadama, you are in effect on the soup. Then what you're basically deciding is that it is vegetable broth, not chicken broth. In other words, you're going to have to be mevatel something. And if you make a shahakol and not hadama, you're saying it's chicken broth, not vegetable broth. So that's the classic ikar tafel case. You can only get on one food. On one part of the food, certainly. You know, this notion, by the way, of making two brachos, of making, let's say, on an ice cream sandwich, or making a shahakal on the mezonos, that's a very new concept. I don't think it exists in the Gemara to be shown, as far as I can tell. It first starts among the achronim. So, assuming, but even within that, certainly if you're taking one spoonful of soup with not two substances that are now easily discrete, distinguishable substances, you're going to make one bracha. That's clear. So now the question is, which do you make? That's an ikar tafel question. Vegetable soup, whether it's vegetable broth, even if you removed all the vegetables, vegetable broth, that's maya d'shilke, right? Absolutely. But if once it's chicken soup, so even though the vegetables add flavor in the broth, nonetheless, it's chicken soup at its, you know, heart. Yes. What is pshitali? No, that's the way you introduce a topic by saying...
It's not like a regular pshita. No.
Pshita is normal. When you say pshita, that's a question. Why did the Amora have to say X if it's already stated in the Mishnah? Pshita li means he's introducing it step by step. This is clear to me. This is not clear to me. So pshita... No, not necessarily. Pshita li, maya de silka kasilka, maya de lifta kalifta, maya de chule shalki, kichule shalki.
Now, also... Do we have to accept Rashi's reading that all this is discussing bracha? Because previously we were talking about the helpful benefits of different foods and things like that, and perhaps the Proverbs statement really just is dealing with that you know, whatever...
So to answer your question, excellent question. Excellent, you know, sensitive reading. And why do you know that's not the case?
The question was, Rashi Rashi says that my desoka kasoka and goes to the entire sugyan says leinyan bracha that the issue what we're comparing here between beets and beet water is a beet broth is that in terms of they have the same bracha. What I'm wondering is that why don't we see this as a continuation of the previous few lines from Chis and Abaye that you're talking about something having certain helpful benefits. That you know, beet water, beet broth is just as healthy for you as beets are. And,
okay.
Because in the following line, by the way,
I was saying, go ahead.
In the following line, what is it for? Mitzvah or is it for a level?
Correct. And why would that have any impact upon the refuah question? In other words, it doesn't matter why.
I was thinking about that because. Shevet itself is healthy, right? It's healthy to munch on milk, on that milk, I'm sorry, right? So the question is, the water that, dill water, right, is that, has that been impacted from the sweetness of the dill, or was just the filth of the water removed, and that's why you put the dill in it?
It's very creative. It doesn't really sound like that.
Because whereas in the previous deals, in almost every other line, we discuss which bracha we're talking about. Here we don't discuss which bracha through the Shema Aminah.
It's very. It's very innovative suggestion, particularly the fact that I thought you were going to say better. You know, I thought someone was going to say that the Boy Rapapa is not Rapapa speaking. In other words, the way it's presented, the Gemara is awkward. Amar Papa Pshitali X, but Boy Rapapa Maya Deshifta Mai. Or better said, the Matuke Taima Avdila Zurizam Avdila is not Rapapa's words. And then the Gemara understood it that way, but Rapapa was talking about a different context. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to say that, I'm okay with that, but it has no relevance. That it doesn't matter to us because the Gemara is understanding that there's an issue by Lagabe Braha, which depends upon the purpose of putting the Shevis in it. I have to tell you, though, I find. That your explanation nonetheless to be a little bit stretched. In other words, is it lavures? In other words, we read it as what's the purpose of putting it in there? You're reading it as what is the effect upon it?
Also,
that's a big jump.
Where did we ever mention silk and lifting in terms of health
benefits? Tavshil shel traden. Silka, same thing. No, we didn't talk about it.
So how can you say Maya de Silka Dami and Maya de Lifta Dami? We would have to mention Lifta also. The only place where we mentioned both Silka and Lifta is by the Bracha, which came before.
Right, except this could just be a passage of, you know, medical suggestions.
No, but if you're saying something is like something, and therefore it has the same meaning as that song, you had to have told us before that it
perhaps.
Okay. Moshe, I hear what I mean. Your time is very reasonable. I don't think it's correct. I appreciate the reading that you're doing because you're reading it carefully, and you know, at other occasions you will uncover gems with that. I suspect that this is not that case, but it's possible. Moshe,
Is this statement
about the? No. I think it's just there. No, I don't think so at all. I think it's there. This is not a din of refuah. This is a din of health.
Right.
Not healing.
So that's, I mean...
So it's here only because we were talking about them right before. That's how the Gemara works.
Right, but the statement, it seems it's just an isolation of passing.
Yes, because we just spoke about, you know, we just spoke about the silka, so Rav Chisda says, by the way, on the topic of... You know, having nothing to do with the halachos brachos, yeah. Yehuda.
He's talking specifically about when this water is hot, right? When you're cooking it.
Is Rapapa?
I
assume you're cooking it. Yes.
So what would you say about cold water? You just put.
Well, it probably doesn't have the effect. If you take dill, you put it in cold water, and then you scoop it out, you won't know there was dill in there.
No, but like a lemon, put lemon in the water, changes the taste. So I'm saying, so my next question was, is there a difference between fruits and vegetables in this?
Fascinating question. And the answer is, that's going to be discussed by the Rishonim. In other words, for those Rishonim who say that fruit juice you don't, I mean, it's so counterintuitive. Fruit juice you don't make a ha'etz on. But what if you cook fruits, certain fruits that are suitable for cooking, and you have tavshil shel, you know, pre, whatever it is, and what's that? No. But it's not, fruit juice is not fruits cooked in water, and then you take the fruits out and you have flavored water.
That's not what
fruit
juice is?
No, fruit juice, you squeeze it out. So, we all have those moments. So anyway, okay, so my assumption is that if it were cold, Yehuda, you wouldn't taste it. You cook the water, you boil the water while you put the sheves in it, and some of the flavor gets out. And the question really was, what was the purpose of the sheves? Okay, now the Gemara gives an answer, Ami. What's the answer? Tashma. By the way, if you stop before you get to the Einba Mishum Truma, you know, you can talk about the special spice called
Shabbos.
A Shabbos Mishanasna Tam Bekedera Einba Mishum. That's like the Shor HaMedaber. Okay, go ahead. No, it's because it's ke'etz ba'alma. It's like if you drain the flavor from something, and now it's basically inedible. Sheves. When you put the sheves in the kedera, once it gives its flavor into the kedera, and you remove it, it doesn't have the kedushas truma anymore. Okay. Ein v'mishum truma ve'ein mitam etumas ochlim. Okay, so you see, it sounds, I mean, I know why it's so explicit, it sounds like that the purpose of putting it in there is to actually sweeten it.
Where do we get that from?
It's clear, and let's put it this way. If the purpose of putting it in there were not to extract the flavor from the sheves and transfer it into the water, then we would say that it still retains Kedushas Truma. You're asking the question. I don't know the answer to this question, let's say that was a natural byproduct or a byproduct memela of being avurei zuama. Why would that matter? Right. Now, all this proves is that it gives tam in the kedera, although we probably didn't need to prove that in the first place.